Chapter 67 Blossom. A full week had passed after Chertan's revivification before Padre Athan arrived at the Shalane's door and announced that the time had at last arrived for the wife to see her husband. The Shalane had spent the week pacing, wondering at the delay. Athan's appearance added to the clues she had already gathered. The Padre's face bespoke neither relief nor victory, but exhaustion and anxiety. Even during their slog through the Shroud Lake Shard, he had carried confidence and drive, but uncertainty smouldered where once passion burned. "Is something amiss, Your Grace?" the Shalane asked tentatively as he entered her room. Athan signalled for her Elderfair guards to shut the door, and then fidgeted until the Shalane asked him to sit.
I don't know where to begin, so I will just say it. As you know, when the soul departs the body, there are two paths. One's character determines in which state the soul will find itself, either to wander the sunny fields of Erelinda, or to suffer in the dark torture of the abyss. Chertan, I'm afraid, dwelt in the latter during his separation from his body.
The Shalane had never doubted that Chertan would end up in the abyss, but for the Padre it appeared to have come as an unwelcome revelation.
I expected as much, she stated honestly.
He is a changed man, Shalane, and I cannot decide if it is for the better.
What is he like now, Your Grace?
A long time had passed since she had cared to know anything about Chertan at all, but Athan's haunted gravity sparked her curiosity. The Padre swallowed before answering.
He is terrified.
Cowardice has always dogged him, Padre.
I don't think you understand, Shalane. He hides from everyone. He shrieks in terror at the slightest noise and jumps at shadows. He sees apparitions of horrors that are not there. He whimpers in corners, refuses to eat, and acts at all times as if something horrible is waiting just outside the door to torment and devour him. We have had to sedate him with potions or use magic just to get food down his mouth. I had hoped to show him publicly to assuage the doubters, but his rational capacity is gone. Half the time he still believes he is in the abyss, and all of this is just some trick.
The Shalane's eyebrows rose in astonishment.
What am I to do?
Athan stood and resumed pacing.
I don't know that you can do anything, but you must see him, for good or ill.
Has he mentioned me at all?
No, but he rarely talks coherently. He mutters under his breath a great deal.
Can't you block his memories, like the Milim Eri did with Jen?
We thought of that, and tried, but in doing so we learned an awful truth about the way the abyss works. The memories that it brands upon the mind cannot be forgotten or undone. They are not dulled by time. They cannot be replaced or reinterpreted. It is a powerful magic that we cannot overcome. There is a dagger in Chertan's mind, and the abyss will never stop twisting it.
The Shalane shuddered, feeling suddenly reluctant.
Are you sure it is such a good idea that I see him? He did not like me.
I do not know if it is a good idea, Shalane, he answered frankly. You'll be fortunate if he even recognizes you. But I need you to see him so you can at least bear witness that he lives. If he cannot be seen and heard, then you need to be.
The Shalane nodded her acceptance and followed Athan out the door. The dark wood and trophy-laden hallways still seemed as foreign as the day she arrived. Iron Keep creaked with every step, unlike the solid foundations of her castle in Mickmere. Servant girls stared at her as they passed through wide hallways. A thickening of the guard indicated that they neared their destination, but the location was wrong.
We had to move him from his quarters to something a little more plain, Athan explained, noting her perplexity. There were too many places for him to hide, and too many objects to stoke his imagination in his extensive suite.
While perhaps a trick of her own thoughts, the Elderfair in the hallway and the two Padres at the door appeared profoundly uncomfortable. Athan nodded to the Elderfair at the door, who undid a large lock before swinging the door inward.
"Go away!"
Chertan screamed, and the Shalane strained to see inside.
"It is only I, Highness," Athan soothed as they entered. "I have brought the Shalane."
"Shut the door, you fools! Shut it!"
Athan nodded. And it was done. The room was little bigger than a servant's quarters and was sparsely furnished.
A single wooden chair lay on its side near a lantern. A muttering, whining Shirtan had crawled under a mattress that stank of urine and sweat.
"It may take a moment," Ethan whispered to the Shalane. "He always has to make sure that nothing gets in when the door is opened."
"Wouldn't a room with a window and sunlight be better for him?" the Shalane asked. "This room is as dark as the abyss."
"No, it is not!"
Shirtan yelled, sticking his head out from under the mattress.
"It is not! Oh, mercy! You're some devil, aren't you? Take it away, Ethan. You're all devils and demons come to tear my insides out and chew my bones."
"We tried taking him outside," Ethan said, hoping that would convince him he was no longer in the abyss, but he could not bear the light. He howled and howled until we brought him back inside. The Padre turned back to the mattress.
"Shirtan, come out. Let's talk. You must greet your wife. She is anxious for your well-being."
"No, it's a trick. I am dead. I have no wife."
Shirtan burst into tears, crawling completely beneath the mattress and into a corner. The Shalane felt dizzy. Shirtan was completely mad. "Believe it or not, he is better than he was," Ethan offered with enough resignation to strangle any hope the statement was meant to convey. "We can go if you wish." The Shalane teetered on the brink of indecision. She wanted to go more than anything, but her husband's pathetic indisposition inspired the healer within her, and she stepped closer, grabbing the mattress.
"Shalane, I wouldn't—"
The Shalane yanked the mattress away, and Shirtan howled in horror, turning toward the wall and curling into a ball. They had tried to dress him in kingly fashion, but his scraping and hiding had shredded and sullied his fine clothing. What fat had remained after the draining march to and from Elder Lurimora had melted completely away, leaving a gaunt, bony face and frame. Crouching down, she touched his arm and he shrank back.
"Shirtan, look at me."
"No!"
"Look at me and remember."
Gradually he turned his head until one tortured eye regarded her. Ensuring that Ethan stood directly behind her, she lifted her veil and showed Shirtan her face. Slowly he turned until both of his black, rimmed eyes stared at her in wonderment and relief, a hint of recognition sparking within his dark mind. A trembling, pale hand stretched out and probed her face as if to prove it solid and not some illusion. Tears ran down his cheeks and he removed his hand, the veil falling.
"Then I am not in the abyss," he said quietly, eyes fixed on the Shalane.
Suddenly he lurched from his corner and threw his arms around his wife like a drowning sailor, clutching for a plank to float on in the stormy water.
"Please save me," he wept. "There is a fire in my mind, and I cannot put it out."
His body shook as he cried, and the Shalane rubbed his back as he trembled, assuring him he was safe. Somewhere amid the tangle of the black thorns of her hatred and disgust for Shirtan bloomed a tender flower of feeling, and its name was pity. Jen approached Mirel quietly, wanting to watch her unnoticed. She sat on a raised stone slab overlooking a blossoming orchard of apple and peach trees, bathed in the warm light streaming through the massive opening into the shard cave. Her hair hung loose about her shoulders, and she sat with her arms around her legs, her head resting on her knees and her face toward the light. Cadean was nowhere to be found, and Jen wondered how she had evaded him. Jen had noticed the change in her from the moment he had embraced her as she emerged from the prison cell in Ironkeep. Unlike when he found her crippled by uncertainty and fear on the barge across Shroud Lake, the dampening of her spirit that he now sensed did not stem from ephemeral external circumstances, but from a profound change to her personality. In her glory in Mikmir, she had accepted nothing contrary to her will, using her substantial gifts to mould and bend every situation to her liking and advantage. While strength still exuded from her, her eyes bespoke resignation and sadness, and Jen took no pleasure in seeing it. Since the time that she confessed her love for him so memorably on the trail to Elder Lurimora, Jen had little time to sort out the confused feelings the first mother conjured within him. While in the castle, her flirtations and affection had both terrified and delighted him, and to keep the delighted part from hammering good sense into oblivion, he had convinced himself that she merely sported with him for her own amusement. Since the disaster at El Deluri Mora, however, he tried to bury his love for the Shalane and whatever he felt for Mirel. The Shalane's stinging words at the waterfall had chased from his heart every other desire save to make restitution for his mistakes, and he had used the dense metal of purpose to shield himself from unwanted and inappropriate emotion. But seeing Mirel sitting in the sunlight, an icon of loneliness against a backdrop of vibrant, blooming life, beat against the walls of his own emotional seclusion. As he stopped and considered the woman, he wished he could will her to stand and face him, eyes playful, face radiant, and greet him with that particular note of pleasure in her voice as she always had. Of course, a world of change had passed since those first carefree days in the chambers of the Shalane, and to expect them to return was folly. Jen ended his observations and strode forward. She did not acknowledge his coming at first, and he sat beside her, watching a gentle breeze tease fallen blossoms about in the midst of rows of festive branches.
"I wondered when you would come," she finally said. "How do you feel?"
"I am well enough. There is something I must do, however."
"And what is that?"
"I have not yet apologized and asked for your forgiveness for not heeding the warnings you and the Shalane gave that night in El Deluri Mora."
Mirel turned her face toward him, expression incredulous and bemused, and started to laugh.
"More apologies? Haven't we gone over this before? Really, Jen, after all we've been through?"
"I must, because of what I put you through, Mirel. You've always been a loyal friend, and I betrayed you and your daughter with my reckless pride. When Ethrys told you I was the Ilk, you should have ordered him to kill me. Everything would be better if you had."
She shook her head. "I do not believe so. How can you? I can see now that I have, however unintentionally, done Mikik's work for him. I created division by affronting Shatan, caused pain to the last two people in the world I should ever hope to cause any distress, and now the people of Kihol have to live with the horror of knowing that one they regarded as a hero was instead an incarnation of evil."
Mirel regarded him, eyes hard.
"Jen, Shatan would have caused plenty of division of his own accord, without your help. If it weren't for your efforts, quite frankly, there might not be a Shalane or a Ha'orik for us to debate upon. It is Shatan that distresses both the Shalane and me. Our only concern for you is our worry for your health and safety. As for the people, what is the real horror? The Ilk, who never harmed anyone, or the Ha'orik, who will sunder their hopes and probably get my daughter killed in the process?"
"I thank you for your good opinion," Jen replied, "but I think even you will have to admit that I became so drunken with my own pretensions and pride that I destroyed my opportunity to be of service to the Shalane and to you."
"Yes, that I can blame you for, though I felt some gratification in seeing you start to realize your own power. Your application of that realization was tragically mistimed."
"I'm glad we can agree on that point. I suppose it is time for the gratitude," Jen said, turning to look her in the eyes.
"There is no need," she said in her best imitation of Jen's voice, a playful spark springing to her eyes.
"But there must be some reward for saving the evil creature of prophecy. Honour demands that something be done."
"You have already given me my honour, my daughter's life, and someone to love. No more is needed or required. It is my pleasure to help you however I can."
They laughed quietly for a moment. Jen brushed away a fallen blossom that had alighted on his pants.
"So do you remember everything I have said?"
"Most of it," she answered, stretching. "So are you going to invite me to walk with you through the orchard? It seems that it would be the thing to do, or perhaps the only thing to do here."
Mirel took Jen's arm and they walked in silence for over an hour, taking solace in one another's presence. They meandered without purpose or direction through the long rows of trees, finally arriving at the mouth of the Shard. The Eld had constructed a low wall across its length, though it provided little aid against the surge of vertigo at the sight of the Shards swirling below in the emptiness of space. The massive chunks of the world had nearly realigned, rotating now in a rough sphere approaching the prophetic day of unification.
"I hope my daughter is well,"
Mirel expressed sadly, eyes on the Shards as if to divine the Shalane's location.
"I wish I could be with her. Who knows what Ethan and Shatan will put her through? Now she doesn't even have Mina to keep her company."
"I think about that often," Jen replied in kind.
If they truly believe the prophecy, then her swollen belly will act as a reminder to treat her with respect. Where she goes, there goes God. I hope you're right, though she is no doubt as lonely as she has ever been. They left the opening and returned through the trees. Jen glanced up to the rock where he and Mirelle had lately spoken and found Gerund and Mina there with feet dangling over the edge.
Wait a minute, Mirelle, Jen requested.
What?
Oh, I see. What are we waiting for?
To see how this turns out.
Jen briefly recounted his history with Mina and Gerund's bitter rejection of the idea that Shaddan Cairn had forced his daughter upon him as a wife. They sat inconspicuously underneath a flowering apple tree, pink blossoms littering the grass beneath them as they watched the couple talk with each other in the distance.
I will never get all these blossoms out of my hair, Mirelle complained quietly as she shook her blonde locks. Are there any left?
A few.
Could you lend assistance to a lady?
Mirelle, please.
This is not some pathetic attempt to trick you into touching me. I am sorry if it seemed that way. Forget the request. I am perfectly aware of your feelings and don't want to discomfort you.
It is I who am sorry, Mirelle. Hold still. This won't take a moment.
As Jen worked through her hair, he found it more difficult than he thought to remove the tiny particles and elusive petals. The sweet smell of the blossoms and the pleasure of the touch of her hair sickened him with guilt. And seeing her head bent back, eyes closed, face peaceful but sad, he stopped.
I think that is most of it, he lied.
Do the elven women have brushes for their hair?
How would I know?
Are you well? She asked.
Just a little tired. I don't think I have my full strength yet.
What will you do if you can see the Shalane again?
Beg her forgiveness, he said.
I failed her badly. She has so many trials, and I... No more stupid speeches of that sort, Jen. The Shalane will want none of that blubbering. Will you tell her how you feel?
Jen's face contracted.
That she knows too well, and would as soon forget, I think. It is no boon to her. From what I understand now, she and the Ha'ulric must come to some good feeling toward each other, or we are all doomed, and I certainly stood in the way of that.
They will never love each other, Mirelle stated,
voice sure.
He is incapable of love, and he has wronged the Shalane too deeply for her to forgive. To own the truth, Aethrys and I had intended to supplant Shaddan with you once we learned you held the power of Triss. So you see, I hoped that you would love my daughter while desperately loving you myself. When I kissed you, I told myself I was to keep you from marrying Fenna, so you would be free to wed my daughter.
He was stunned.
And how were you to get rid of Shaddan?
Assassinate him.
Don't give me that look. You actually tried to do it.
I had only planned to do so.
Jaren ultimately had the satisfaction. One of Shaddan's only redeeming virtues is that he is alive again, so hopefully someone else can have the pleasure. We were going to use the assassin's glass to do it after we were sure the Shalane was pregnant. Of course, we had no idea the church had ways of returning the dead to life. Please don't tell the Shalane about our plan if we chance to see her again, if you would be so kind.
Oh, look, he's finally done it. It's about time.
Jen, mind spinning, turned toward the slab, finding Mina and Gerund kissing ardently. He smiled and turned to Mirelle, finding her gaze riveted on them as well, and while her lips turned up softly, her eyes were flint. She sighed.
It is no good for the beggar to watch the feast. So if you aren't planning on grabbing me and kissing me until I can't see straight, I must bid you farewell. Those two could use a good example, you know.
Jen could not think of a single reply, and Mirelle squeezed his arm and left, face disappointed. Jen exhaled and ran his fingers through his hair, a shower of blossom petals falling about him. He turned away from Gerund and Mina, comprehending perfectly Mirelle's comment about beggars and feasts. The sunshine attracted him, and he returned to the low wall in front of the opening in the shard, flipping his legs over the edge to dangle them into the void. The shards drifted in orderly patterns, covered in the white of winter. So small they seemed that he felt he could extend his hand and pluck one up and examine it closely. The Shalane, pregnant and defenceless against Shaddan's barbarity, walked somewhere below, and Jen could do nothing to help her. The approach of Devlis, a jade staff in hand, distracted him from his thoughts.
The ancient elf regarded him with curiosity, standing just to his side and gazing into the expanse below.
"You do not fear the fall?" he asked in Elvish.
"No."
"Do you have such confidence in your own control, then?"
Jen chuckled.
"In matters of physical balance and strength, yes. My temperament I cannot vouch for."
Devlis leaned on his staff.
"It is always so with your kind. There simply isn't time in your short lives to develop the steadiness that would help you rule your natures, or if it is developed, then much of the power you could wield with your wisdom has faded with age and infirmity. So you are left vainly trying to convince the heady generations of the unheeding young to hearken to you and obey your counsel. And so the cycle has gone, century after century, and the entire race is unable to progress simply because they cannot live long enough to reap the benefits of the lessons they learn in life."
Jen nodded. "And your people live so long they can no longer take pleasure in or feel sadness for anything, because every experience is too familiar, and every feeling a repeat of something felt 100 times before." Devlis rubbed his chin in thought.
"A fair assessment, perhaps. But your arrival has certainly stirred some sentiment within us. But I want to return to my initial comment, for I did not offer it to give you insult or make light of your race. You see, you are unique among your kind. You have the benefit of long wisdom given you by the men and elf who inhabited your mind for a time after they released themselves from the stones. The Millimeri did not foresee this.
If you know that much, then you have no doubt also seen how the additional endowment of wisdom has profited me little, for I leaned on my own instead."
"In some things, yes," Devlis said. "But in others you acted with a wisdom and courage beyond your years. Your challenge of Shatan is an example. If left to your own wisdom, I doubt you would have had the sense of moral courage or the disregard for titles and station it required to act when you saw indecency. It seems so natural to you that you acted as you did that you can scarce understand why it should seem remarkable. Take the chance to ask your woman about how she perceived those events, and you may start to understand."
"My woman?"
"Mirel."
Jen turned away from his gaze.
"She is not my woman."
"She is. You simply aren't her man. But to the point, I come to encourage you. You are wrapped up in a mission you see as noble, but which is, in fact, short-sighted. You have shut away the wisdom in your head so you can wallow in your failures in an attempt to justify your own inaction."
"My inaction?" Jen exclaimed, irritated at Devlis's assumptions. "I would like nothing more than to cross to the world below and act. The Shalane need my help, and I desperately wish to give it."
"That isn't the inaction I am referring to,"
Devlis said, stepping closer.
"Your idea of action is to present her a pile of the bodies of her enemies, whisk her away to some stronghold, and then guard her like a starved dog guards its last bone."
"And you say that such an action isn't necessary?"
"What I am saying is that your goal is only to spare her pain, but not to help her. Do you think the Shalane sits and thinks all day of her own comfort and safety? That she wants nothing more than to be loved and happy? Certainly these are desirable to her, but her teachers raised her to respect her duty and to strive to fulfill it. You understand this. I saw it in your mind. What I am suggesting is that you help the Shalane by helping her purpose, by lending your wisdom to her duty and not just by cutting up everything that threatens her."
Jen thought for a moment.
"But her only duty is to bear a child, and to bear a child requires nothing but her survival. Cutting up everything that threatens her seems to be a wise course in helping her."
Devlis leaned heavily on his staff.
"Let me explain this differently. Your problem is that you treat the Shalane's problems as if you were both standing alone in a room. If a monster comes in, you kill it and are done, not caring where it came from or the forces that set it in motion. From what I have gleaned from your mind and from your companions is that there are many forces, political, magical, and sinister, that strive to turn the keyhole that men have fashioned into chaos. What I am suggesting is that you are possessed of unique gifts that can help the Shalane by shaping and manipulating the forces that are sending the world to its destruction.
Your woman has an excellent sense of this, and can help find places you can be of use, and apply what is already in your head. Please don't call Mirelle my woman. She would be very offended.
She most certainly would not,
Devlis stated flatly. But let me offer this. When you return to Rugoth, your inclination is to return to the Shalane. Do not give way so easily to your first impulse. Tap into your mind. Talk with Mirelle. You might be surprised what two clever people can do, even if human.
Devlis left, and for several moments the thought of getting off the Shard and returning to Keyhole drove away all of Devlis's instruction. But as Jen rose and walked the orchard, the ancient elf's words sank into his heart, and a memory from Telmerin surfaced. During the first Mikikian War, an Uyumark horde had streamed toward the castle Mikar, the stronghold of Telmerin's lord. Telmerin and his men, having campaigned much in the warm summer, heard of the danger and tried to return to aid their lord. They arrived too late, finding the castle besieged. Throughout the winter, Telmerin and his intrepid men cut off supply lines, raided camps, and assassinated leaders until the siege collapsed in chaos. The memory gave weight to Devlis's words. If he could not be with the Shalane within her stronghold, then he could weaken the enemies that beset her and perhaps save her from a certain doom when she stood with Shatan before Mikik's armies. Invigorated by these thoughts, he sprang up the stairs, interrupting an embarrassed Gerund and Mina. He grinned and waved, jogging toward the stone tree the elves had provided to Mirelle for her residence.
First, I think, Jen said, sitting with Mirelle on a balcony carved into a limb, I must know what you have already set in motion.
Mirelle, a little bewildered though not displeased by Jen's sudden change of spirit, leaned back and thought for a moment.
Quite frankly, you ruined most of what I had planned as a contingency by running off to Ogmir. After Aethon had captured you, my plan, of course, was to recover you and see you safely to Rugoth. You were to winter there. When the time came to march, we were going to contrive some way to have you close to the Shalane and Shatan, so that when they faced Mikik, you could interfere, and with any luck save my daughter and her child.
What of Aethrys? Jen asked. Maiwen said you had sent him to Rugoth.
Aethrys has two important missions. First is to sow doubt about the tales the church is spreading about Shatan, and to prepare the people to accept you when you return. General Harband is to secretly gather and inform the regents that they are to assume power again at the start of spring.
That will break the Fidelium, she smiled.
Absolutely. I might add that when Rugothians and Tolnorians find out that Shatan has assumed leadership of the Church of the One, there very well may follow some religious and political turmoil, regardless of anyone's dedication to the Fidelium. I still cannot believe Belyamos could do something so idiotic. I know my people. They will readily believe your innocence, and I want just enough ill will towards Shatan percolating in their hearts that they will abandon him and follow some other lead, your lead, for instance, when the time comes to do so. Of course, she continued, while Aethrys works for me on the one hand, he will offer his services of protection and counsel to the warlord that Shatan assigned to govern Rugoth. Aethrys is, of course, spying and manipulating instead, so you see, the idea is that Rugoth can be taken out of Shatan's control at our convenience, with a minimum of fuss or bloodshed. I don't know how many Ogmerian soldiers are sleeping in Mikmir right now, but they will find themselves dead or walking home, if I say so.
Jen leaned back and grinned.
You don't know how good it is to hear you talk so. I feel like I'm back in Mikmir already. What of Torbrand and Maywin? Maywin, after saving you and reporting back to Aethrys, was to lay low for the winter until she could get back onto the Shroud Lake Shard. Before Aethon had me bundled up and shipped off to Ironkeep, a new alliance of mine informed me that the Church was interested in scouting out Echo Hold, as well as assessing Mikik's activities there. Maywin will shadow them and bring word to Aethrys, since we can't be sure how much the Church will want to share, or, if they do, how much they will distort. As for Torbrand, I'm still amazed that monster is on our side. You changed him somehow, Jen. I never thought I could count on his service, but he seemed eager to help. He was to return to Tolnor and seek out Gerund and Dason's father, Lord Kildan, and find out how many Ogmerian soldiers still quarter in your former nation. I'm hoping Lord Kildan knows the hiding place of King Filingrail. I'd planned to reinstate him, but chances were always slim at best.
You are very ambitious.
Morel smiled weakly. So what is it that you want to do?
I wanted to understand first.
May I ask why you are suddenly so interested? Morel said, eyes curious.
Master Devilish reminded me of a few lessons I have lying around in my head. I want to throw off this darkness of spirit and be of use. I have other ways I can help the Shalane besides sticking a sword in every enemy I come across.
And this has brought you bounding to my door?
Mostly. Neither one of us weathers idleness very well. I'm ready to be obedient to you, as I should have been all along, and do whatever you suggest to aid the Shalane. You are as clever a person as I've ever known, and I need someone with your experience to help channel whatever influence or power I have left to give.
Morel nodded, eyes bright. Devilis must have given you some speech.
Jen recounted Devilis's instructions to him, leaving out his comments about Jen's woman.
Morel nodded her agreement with his words. He is right, you know. But let me be clear. I don't want you as a servant or an obedient subject. I want you to stand beside me and not behind me. You have a great deal of knowledge and wisdom packed away in that head of yours, and if you are quite done with your pointless self-deprecation and crippling guilt, then I think I can help you make use of them. In other words, if I even think I'm about to hear the words, "I am sorry," come out of your mouth, I'll belt you as hard as I can. Understood?
Jen laughed, grabbing her hand and kissing it. This felt more like old times.
I understand. Where do we begin?
Time passed surprisingly quickly for Jen as he and Morel spent almost every hour together, plotting and planning or speaking of their mutual concern for the Shalane. Cadane kept busy following them around the strange confines of the cave, and Gerund and Mina passed the time quite pleasurably as well. Only Volney and Udan suffered from a persistent case of boredom after the initial infatuation with their unusual surroundings wore off. The elves and dwarves remained aloof of them, all save Faleo, who found Jen often and conversed with him in Elvish. He had never seen humans or the wonders of Kihol, and only he and his father seemed possessed of some life among the dull stares of his race. The few dwarves they saw walked bent over, ancient beards dragging upon the ground. One morning, while Jen and Morel walked among the fruit trees, an excited Volney sprinted up to them.
"I think it is time. They're all marching this way."
"Gather everyone," Morel ordered.
"There's no need," Jen told her. "It looks as if Devilis has brought them."
Moments later, the elves descended with the humans in tow. All wore cloaks, and Devilis and Alejandra carried others, offering them to Morel and Jen.
"Give these to your people. It is time to leave this place."
"What are the dwarves?" Jen asked.
"They wish to remain. Come."
Devilis led them to the shard edge.
"Alejandra, if you will."
She spoke a word, and a section of the low wall crumbled and fell into space.
"Each of you put your cloak on," Devilis continued. "They are imbued with a power that will let you fall from any height and land unharmed. Simply follow our lead. What you know as the Rugothian Shard Cluster will pass below us soon. My people and I will await there for unification and seek out our masters, the Millimeri. We may yet cross paths. I leave Fadael with you. He is curious about your kind, and his law will serve you well. Ah, here it comes."
They leaned close to the edge, watching as the large shards that formed Rugoth appeared a dizzying distance below, sliding slowly beneath them.
"He can't be serious," Volney and Udan said in unison,
but in that moment Devilis jumped, and his people streamed through the gap, falling in a pack to the distant ground below. Jen swallowed hard. Heights did not frighten him, but falling great distances did.
"Is there any way to tell if they all just died?" Volney asked.
"No, it's too far down," Gerund answered.
"Faith, gentlemen," Jen encouraged them.
Morel shrieked as Jen grabbed her by the waist and pulled her over with him, Faleel close behind. The rest followed suit. Wind howled in their ears as they fell, the shard below rushing up to greet them. Jen glanced at Morell, whose eyes were wide and face pale. The closer they came to the ground, the greater the sensation of danger and speed. Swiftly, individual trees and houses resolved into view, hurtling toward them. The sight of the elves already milling around on the ground gave them confidence that a deadly impact was not to be the end of their journey. But Volney yelled in terror anyway. The magic worked. A few yards before impact, their descent slowed and they touched lightly on the grass of a verdant field bracketed by sun-bathed hills.
"That was exciting," Morell commented, face flushed.
Volney wiped the vomit from his mouth and grumbled something unintelligible that sounded a lot like he disagreed.